You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
It's okay. Finally waited. Erickson, low. Great ball into the middle. What a save by Heaton. Tonight, Sebastian Sanchez, Lucas Moura. And belted into the net, brilliant goal. On debut, Tunde Ondombele has scored the equaliser for Spurs.
Let's take it out of the way. Lucas Moura clips it.
Oh, great goal! Steven Bergwijn has arrived in North London. That is absolutely incredible on debut. Oh, yay! What a finish for 3-2 from Serge Aurier!
First hand here for Son. Okay, good area for Spurs.
Kane's not afraid to shoot. Wow, what a goal, Harry Kane. That is exceptional. Try and place it. Wonderfully taken by Eric Lamela. Never afraid to take on a shot, and with good reason.
Terry in the Burnley back line, and Son breaks forward.
Oh, wow, what a run. Yunmin Son from inside his own half has scored one of the best goals of his Spurs career.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Touchline Hotspur. I'm making my hosting debut this week, so for any potential new listeners or who just don't recognize my voice, my name is Ohio. I'm a very stress-free Tottenham fan in general because I do not let them affect my peace. This week I have three of the mandem with me. Hello, brothers. First we have Jack. How are you doing, my friend?
Just living off apathy right now. What can I say? I mean, how can you let this team affect you and it keeps doing this to you every week?
That's literally it, man. You have to protect your peace. And that was our resident chairman of the Harry Winks Association. We have Dave, our resident football coach. How are you, bro?
Yeah, very frustrating. Mate. Just can't see anything coming the rest of the season, and I'm a man of faith, but boy, this is tough. This is pushing me, boy. This is pushing me.
How's your questioning for real? I feel for the Muslim Tottenham fans. How are you feeling this during Ramadan? This is not what you signed up for in the slightest.
Yeah.
And then we have our resident Harry Winks chairman, we have our resident coach, and of course our resident Peaky Blinder himself, Owen. How are you, my friend?
I'm going to let the podcast determine my mood. Hello again. Yeah, fine. So welcome again to the Deja Votspur Hot podcast. Let's get into it.
Oh, the pain.
I like that. Deja Votspur.
Flipping hell, man. Jesus Christ. Oh God! Right, cool. So this is recording obviously live straight after the Everton game. So I think the first thing we're going to say is, you know, Tobes is losing his head at the three at the back. So I think the best thing to start with is what was going on with that lineup, Dave. I'm going to let you start. Chat to me about the lineup.
Yeah. So you know, when I looked at it, it took me about 5 minutes to try and work out what he was going to do, and yeah, it was three at the back. It looked like a 3-5-2. On the ball, but then like a mismatch of a 5-4-1 off the ball. It was really, I think the worst thing about it is manager of his experience, you know, those kind of formations, you need to have the right players in position. Do you mean he played, you know, our slowest defenders, okay, as a back three, that's a warning sign. And in the midfield, he had our two slowest midfielders. So anytime we had to shift across, anytime we had to do anything of any with any sort of movement and dynamic, we just got completely outplayed. We let a makeshift Everton team dominate us. You know, Richarlison and Sigurdsson were having their way in that first half, making runs off everyone. And the lineup kind of predicted it because we just didn't have the pace to really play in such a fluid system. And I it makes me think, and I know people have probably said this online and whatnot, you know, what's he been doing all week? You know, he's had these guys all week. There's no midweek games. We're not playing in any European competition. We've had two or three solid weeks now to lead up to these games. And it's just mishmash, completely mishmash. And I'm not, you know, we know that some of these players aren't good enough. You know, we know that. But you've got to pick a team that can either mask that or just get around some of those obvious problems. You know, Sissoko and Højbjerg, we know that's not going to work. Do you know what I mean? We absolutely know that's not going to work. And, you know, there was one point in the game, sorry, I'm not going into the game now, but Sissoko, you remember Sissoko in the Champions League final? He gave away a penalty for sticking up his hand, right? He literally did that for the whole game today. Every time the ball's around him, he's pointing this way, pointing that way. I'm like, dude, oh my life. It's so frustrating, but you pick those type of system, and you can't work miracles with the calibre of players you've got. And here we are.
Here we are indeed. You touched on our midfield a little bit earlier. Jack, I was wondering what your thoughts were on our control, or lack thereof, actually, especially in the first half. Feel free to crucify any players of your choosing.
Let me start with Højbjerg. He's been poor for the past month or so. His passing is completely off. Every time he gets a touch, his second touch ends up being a tackle. Wherever he receives the ball, it just puts us in danger. Reguilón, he's not a midfielder, but absolute poor. Probably his worst game in his Spurs shirt. And Ndombele. Been poor in 2021. I have to say, I've been defending this guy since he's joined us, but I can't defend him in 2021. He's been poor. His passing is horrific. It's horrific. He's a shadow of what he can be, and it's just worrying. It's worrying. Every single player on the pitch is just not performing at any level at all, apart from Harry Kane. Absolutely no control in that midfield. It just begs the question, you know, how do you replace Christian Eriksen? What kind of player do you replace Christian Eriksen with? Because we haven't. We need that profile of player in our team. And even a half-assed Christian Eriksen would have done a better job than anyone in this midfield right now. But Christian Eriksen, because of his final season, because of his demeanour, he'll always get slated, and he'll always be remembered by a section of the fan base as rotten. And it's sad. It's sad because he would be the player that would bring that control. We don't have anyone that in our squad that could do that.
I absolutely agree. I think, you know, there's a lot of chat of people talking about Lo Celso was supposed to replace him, and some people say he wasn't. Some people said we were meant to get Lo Celso and Bruno. Some saying else that wasn't the plan. And yeah, you know, I think it's fair to say that this pod is pretty much a Tongi and Ndombele stan account. Always has been, always will be. You know, we have quite literally pulled up screenshots of people talking shit on our boy. But, you know, one thing we aren't is biased, and we just have to accept that he's not necessarily been good enough recently. Højbjerg as well. I think it's getting harder not to allow Dissu to call him oil burger. I'm having to let that one slide nowadays. There was one particular pass that he hit. I think he tried to hit Reguilón around the corner with his left foot. And it's not even like it was along the ground and he misplaced it or was 5 yards behind. It quite literally went into like row F. Like, it was like 8 feet in the air. And I was just a bit like, what are you doing? He got that yellow. When he got that yellow in the 7th minute, I said, okay, he's not going to play well today. But, you know, I think I'm hopeful for a turnaround, just not necessary this season. Owen, did you have any thoughts on any particular performances apart from the killer up top, of course?
Well, with just some of the system, I didn't actually hate the system. It was more the personnel in place. I don't think you can play a three at the back without having a plan to control the middle of midfield, because it invites way too much pressure, especially if Oyberger's off it. Sissoko's in there being him. It's still insane to me how much he's fallen off a cliff this season and not necessarily our best ball-playing centre-backs. Funnily enough, that is something that ended up happening. We invited pressure, shock. It's annoying that we do have somewhat of a controller in our squad that could have played in midfield tonight, but Mourinho's ran him into the ground and had everyone thinking that he's actually a really shit player in Winks. Even Lo Celso could have probably played in that role tonight, to a better effect. As for everything else, I can't actually name a positive performance tonight other than Kane's, to be honest. And Kane ended up just feeding on scraps, and he actually got 2 goals, fair play to him. And Ndombele, I never did necessarily hate him playing in that kind of advanced, as the most advanced midfielder, as long as he wasn't just told to just stick up there and wait to receive the ball, because it was clear we did not have a plan to progress the ball to him in the first place. We have to play to his strengths and he has to come deep and break the lines himself. But for whatever reason, the manager instruction doesn't seem to be that he has to wait for the ball, which just never comes to him, because unfortunately he's the best in our team when he's out of form to receive the ball in the half turn and play those through balls. So all in all, I didn't hate the system, but just the way it was implemented was absolutely awful.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
What I was saying there, a lot of the players that we just rightly said have had poor performances. I know someone's mentioned about Reguilón and Son. They've had poor performance because they've been playing out of position in some games. You know, we're putting Ndombele as a 10 without anyone to feed him the ball. He goes invisible for 10, 20 minutes at a time. Even today, there was, you know, with Sissoko and Højbjerg behind you, you're not getting nothing. Do you know what I mean? Like I said, Sissoko was standing like a traffic warden, you know, just pointing people around the pitch. It's just horrible. Do you know what I mean? Reguilón, yes, he obviously had a hip injury, and I do think he's suffering that kind of typical first season. You've gone through that Christmas break, you've played a lot of games. I think he's got a little bit of that in his performances, which is what's kind of affecting him. Højbjerg's been running to the ground. Our substitutions are weird. You know, it's a mess really from Mourinho, and I think that's what's affecting a lot of the performances of our better players, bringing them back to the pack, and then we've got obviously issues in defence. Every single game there's issues. That first chance that Richarlison had, he pretty much walked into the penalty box. You know, without any sort of contest from any of our three defenders. So it's a shocker in some of these personnel picks. And like I said, with that change in formation, it's not going to help.
Agreed. Well, yeah, I was going to get on to, you know, Dread Knight's comment in there about Sonny not getting as much blame. But again, it's also going to be extremely difficult when the ball doesn't come. I think I saw, not a heat map, I think it was a touch map of Ndombele's touches in the first half. And you know, part of it was him not playing well at all, but there was also in that general 10 area, you know, 20 to 25 or so yards outside the box, I'm pretty sure he had two touches in the first 45 minutes in that zone, which is extremely scary. I think the next bit it would make more sense to talk about is the Harry Kane carry job, as it is, as it seems to be most of the time. Obviously, Owen, you touched on Kane a little bit there, so I'm gonna let you talk us through the Kane carry job for tonight.
Yeah, there was an interesting bit of commentary, and this is a bit of it's pretty much typical of Sky Sports recently, where they're saying that, oh, he's barely had a touch in the game, he's barely been seen, etc. Where all I saw was him dropping deep and trying to link play for most of the game. It's been, well, I did miss a bit of the first half, but from what I was watching, he was constantly dropping deep to get the ball off for himself, pass it off, try and get the team playing with just a few little layoffs, few little passes, and then to try and get in the box. But for whatever reason, it didn't come off. The team looked largely out of sync. I can't fault his effort. Like, there have been a few times recently where I've thought, like, his body language is starting to look really, really fed up. And I don't blame him, to be fair, but it's looking like he's gradually getting more fed up. But, yeah, it was just a weird narrative from, again, Sky Sports to kind of say that, they're implying that he's not in the game, he's not trying, where he was by far our best player tonight. He was the only one really looking like a threat. It was lucky in the way he got his goals, yeah, but you make your own luck. And that's all I can say, really. He's going to be a big miss next weekend if this injury of his looks as bad, well, is as bad as it looked earlier.
Yeah, no, exactly. It's the harder you train, the more lucky you're going to get. And they just felt he finished like the killer that we all know he is, and the shouts of, you know, Kane has to leave to do whatever is are only going to get louder. You know, Jay Spurs said it in the comments, you know, he was feeding off scraps the whole game and he's still bad. And I actually didn't notice this part of the game because I was busy finishing up the agenda, but Kane obviously went off with an injury in the 93rd minute. I actually didn't see the challenge. Jack, I don't know if you saw it.
Yeah, Richarlison sort of landed on him. It looks bad.
That was going to be my next thing. I was like, was it a case of he came off because there were 15 seconds left and we had another sub, or could he not walk, really?
He was hobbling a fair bit, and it could be because of that, and hopefully at most it's a knock, but We all know about Harry Kane's ankles, both of them, and we know what it's. He walked off the pitch shaking his head, so that probably says it all. Really, it's probably worse than, it was probably as bad as we're fearing. So, League Cup final next week as well.
That was the thing as well. Like, he was, it was about a minute and a half left in the game when the challenge actually happened. So for Harry Kane to not want to at least see the rest of the game out was really telling. And again, like Jay Spurs is saying in the comments, he literally walked off the side of the pitch, a different way to everyone else at the final whistle, shaking his head. So, yeah, despite his new trim, it didn't look good. Didn't look good.
It's just an amalgamation of what it means to be a Tottenham Hotspur fan. The only shining light we have in the team, and we're probably not going to have him for the final. I mean, We're going to touch on some Jose stuff a bit later on, but I have a feeling, I think Kane will play in that final, just at least because we've got at least there's a game in between. I think they'll definitely put him on ice for Southampton, but I'm not saying he has to, like, obviously him playing in the final gives us a better chance of winning, but I think it'll be a mix of Kane wanting to play, do you know what I'm saying, as our star player, but then also Jose does have a history of trying to push players through injury, but like I said, we'll touch on that later on. I think that's enough about Everton. We lost to a team. It felt like we lost. We didn't beat a team that had Tom Davies at the anchor, despite the fact we were slewing him under AD Boothroyd's management. So we're gonna rewind a little bit. We're gonna go to the United game. We're gonna review that. We've had a bit of time for it to, I say, get out of our system, but it still leaves quite a bit of taste. I think we'll probably just start with. I don't even know where to start, to be honest. We can start with who do you feel did or didn't stand out? Who was poor in the United game?
I think a whole lot of them were, but for me, Eric Dier was the worst. He's had some shockers for us this season or past couple of seasons. Not been a great player at the back, but I think for me, just watching him, you know, Cavani, we all know what he's about. Like, Cavani's not going to pick up the ball on halfway line and take it around 3-4 players and smash it in top end, is he? He's all about quick movements. He's a poacher in and around the box, you know, feeding off, you know, passes from Pogba, all that kind of stuff. And I think the fact that, you know, Dier had absolutely no respect for Cavani's movement. He just left him. He's like, oh, you know what? He can just do whatever he wants. He can set up tent in our box and just leave him. And for all United's best play was coming off Cavani, just peeling off him, just so easily. He was pretty much playing, you know, square to the touchline in some ways. And I think for me, it really just showed how we can't trust these players. You know, he's obviously, we all know he's not good enough at that position, even though he feels like he is. And we invite too much pressure, you know, for that kind of thing. We need to play further up the pitch if we're going to, you know, because we know that our players are limited. But asking these players in the current level they're at, and with all the silly mistakes that they're making, to sit back, sit deep, concentrate and, you know, track runs, all that kind of stuff, is just asking for trouble. So again, Dier was for me indicative of the whole performance. And it's just, you know, we're living off, and I know you said earlier about Kane feeding off scraps, but I feel like the whole team is just living off scraps. It's just fumes. You know, you can see that, you know, players don't want to ever play in these kind of defensive setups. They don't really have an out ball. They don't have any invention or creativity, really. And when we do have a bright spark, you kind of think, all right, can we do this for 5-10 minutes? Psh, mate, 2 minutes later, we're back on the edge of our box and getting peppered by, you know, Pogba. And I think the fact that Fred scored against us, you know, adding to the list of, I think it's the Hall of Fame, I think, the Premiership Hall of Fame of players to score against Spurs this season, with Joe Linton looking at prime Ronaldo against our back four every time we play against Newcastle. I think just, you know, it just showed up how bad we were. And even when we were up, I knew that it was going to probably end up in a loss, because our defences had no idea where their attackers were. To try and stop any sort of momentum from them, really.
Exactly that. And, you know, if you looked at the lineup, almost to a point, maybe bar Lucas or maybe Gareth Bale and obviously Eric Dier, it's the team that a lot of Spurs fans have been calling out for most of the season. We had Højbjerg and Ndombele and Lo Celso. We had Son, Kane, but in Lucas Moura's defence, he has actually been one of our better players, especially Turner 2021. And admittedly, that's not saying a lot. Jack, what did you think of our Lo Celso on the right, in that right hand area? What were your thoughts on him?
I thought he did okay in the first half. I liked his intensity. One thing we definitely do get from Lo Celso is he's always a runner, he's always chasing, he's good off the ball. And I think that's something that Mourinho appreciates when he plays, when he's on that pitch. Didn't affect the game too much on the ball. No one did that game, to be honest. We're pretty fortunate. I can't even remember. I tried to like forget that game as soon as full time went. So there's not too much I even remember from it. I just remember, I remember Lo Celso being pretty decent off the ball. But he was, again, second half performance when United were on the front foot, when really on the front foot, and we were sort of chasing shadows almost. He wasn't in the game. They were breaking through our press and very, very easily, or our so-called press, which obviously they're not coached to do. But generally, in terms of the season, we know he's had his injury problems, but since he's been here, I can't say I've been overly impressed at all. He's definitely not been value for money, definitely for me. And he would make a good squad player for what we want to achieve, but I can't see this guy. I can't see us needing this guy to start week in, week out, and, you know, sort of take the game by the scruff of the neck. He's not that kind of player at all.
I mean, that was a fairly unfair question for me, because I literally said it and I thought, I cannot remember a lot. I think I've actually forced this United game out of my memory. Owen, I'm going to be a little bit mean here and remind you that you are on record of saying that you were fairly confident in Ndombele was going to, and I'm going to paraphrase here, spin Pogba out of his socks. And it would seem that Pogba locked him down like a shin pad. So would you, what were your thoughts on Ndombele in that game? And Pogba.
I would be forced and inclined to agree with that point on Pogba versus Ndombele, because really and truly he did dunk on us, mainly in the second half. Do you know what? I was actually quite buoyed by our first half performance, because yeah, obviously we're not coached in this kind of pressing at all, but I thought we actually implemented it quite well. We didn't really have an idea. When it came to progressing the ball, there was Lucas who kept on spinning offshore. We weren't really brave enough to give him the ball. And then the one time he actually did get in behind, he set up Son to score. Maybe we'll get onto the Son incident a bit later on. Maybe we won't. We got to the second half and, yeah, like you said about Pogba, he moved inside off the left for what looks like an Ollie change into a 4-2-2, where, like, Pogba wasn't really getting any joy in the first half. He was starting to just peg us completely in the second half, for lack of a better term, like, because that was almost pretty much what he'd done, as well as Cavani just completely running down our right channel. Yeah, like, there was a lot me made of us kind of protecting the lead again. It was deja vu. At the start of the second half, throughout to when they got the second goal. It was annoying because we obviously saw Pogba was running the game. Mourinho actually tried to react proactively, in his mind anyway. I'm not saying that it was a proactive substitution, but bringing on Sissoko to deal with Pogba has worked in the past. So I could see the thinking behind the substitution, even though I didn't necessarily agree with it, because we ended up taking off Lo Celso, I think it was. Yeah. So, yeah, it kind of felt like we were really inviting pressure, but we did need to stem the flow of Pogba. And it was immediately, I think it might have even been like a minute or two after Sissoko came on, there was an incident where Lucas Moura picked the ball up in our half. And this is why I don't like all the United fans giving Son shit at the moment, because especially Ollie as well, with his comments about Son after the game, where Lucas dribbled out with the ball, took it past Bruno, but Bruno very, very slightly clipped Lucas, jumped on the floor, rolled around, started screaming, and we put the ball out of play, even though we were on a counter-attack, which I was pissed. I was pissed because I knew the only way we were going to hurt this team is through really quick transitions and just to try and hit them on the break. And for all of our absorbing of pressure once they equalised, we actually did start to wake up and create some chances and test Henderson. So when we put that ball out for a counter-attack, I was thinking to myself, if they score from this, I am going to fucking lose it. I'm going to absolutely lose my rockers. I guess they might have said in Peaky Blinders. I don't know. I haven't actually watched the show, which is crazy. They still had a lot to do. Like, we tried to play out, as losing a quick transition opportunity, and the ball fell to Sissoko in the middle of the pitch. It was bouncing up. He could have just taken it down. He wasn't really under pressure, to be honest, but lo and behold, he ended up giving it away. United still had a lot to do, but Bruno Fernandes gets the ball, nutmegs Reguilón, Greenwood crosses it in, Cavani heads it, and we've given them a goal, being a bit soft and Spursy, which it was completely annoying. And then after that, our a kind of resurgence after they equalised was just out the window. Like, we didn't show anything after they did score the second goal, other than what was almost a fortunate set piece, which I think Cavani was the one that cleared it off the line. So yeah, it was a gutless game, mostly in the second half, a deja vu game where we took the lead and inviting pressure in the second half. It was almost like watching Inception on repeat. Like, I may as well have just watched it. And I was just seeing the comments saying we've had Anthony Gardner and Fazio, and yes, Eric Dier is the worst thing. Yeah. Oh God, I don't even know what I would rate him for that game. I'll give him a 3, but the thing is with Dier as well, just to round off, I'll always maintain that he probably has the physical attributes to be a great centre-back, even. But, and it showed today his biggest, not today, but against United, his biggest weakness is when he gives this false sense of calmness just through coasting through games. And it's extremely annoying where I think of all the attackers in the league would have twigged onto it by now. All you've got to do is run off his back. He's not going to care. He's going to let you run. So yeah, Dier, again, he needs to try and get some more kind of, at least some awareness in his game, and he might actually be a semi-decent centre back next year because no one's going to buy him. So yeah, if he can try and improve for next year, that would be just great.
I'm not going to lie, Fazio and Anthony Gardner also had the physical attributes to be.
Did Fazio though? Back.
Yeah,
Fazio yeah, couldn't run. Dier can actually run a fairly decent top speed.
Anthony Gardner.
I had a soft spot for Gardner. With Dier, I feel like he's deceptively quick. I'm going to get killed for saying that in the group chat, but
he's a deceptive footballer.
He has a decent switch. He can bring the ball out. He can step out of the defensive line and win 50-50s. He is quite decent in the 50-50 once he gets there. He's decent in the air. As I said at the beginning of this season, he just needs the XP and the accountability as well, because that comment he made after a certain game, it might have even been after the Chelsea game when he done his best Booker T impression, where he said, oh, it's not me making mistakes, it's the team performance. If he can get some accountability and awareness, he might be a good squad player for us. I'm not having him start, just to put that on record, I'm not having him start, but for me, if he can get some experience and awareness, he can be a decent centre-back, because we are stuck with him.
Well, asking a 27-year-old man who has been playing football for however long to try and gain some awareness and not
track. Like,
I'm not good at football, and I know Cavani's movement is unreal. Like, you can't sleep on Cavani, but at least I appreciate you trying to be impartial on Eric Dier. You're probably the only person in the chat who maybe would help him spread his ashes all over White Hart Lane as he asked. Which is hands down
ridiculous.
The weirdest thing.
After someone from this podcast burns him.
What? A, no names.
He wants to haunt us dead or alive. Like,
there's a queue.
Man. Right. You touched on it a bit earlier, Owen. Ollie had a lot to say. After this game, he has stuff to say about, you know, watching us, match analysis morning of, and he had some stuff to say about Son. So for those who aren't aware, there was a goal got disallowed, and effectively there was a bit of a tussle. I say a tussle. It was just McTominay has gone past Son. Son's had a grab at him, as you would. McTominay is just sort of, I can't even say batted back. He's just got his arm out to shield the ball effectively. Son's got, I could call it a very aggressive poke to the eye. I could also call myself a liar. Whichever one you want to pick is fine. Son has hit the deck. Goal's been disallowed. Now, Ollie's comments said, if that was my son and he stays down and he needs his mates to help him up, he doesn't get food because that's embarrassing. # the game is gone. I personally think that's a little bit rich coming from Ollie, but, you know, Dave, what are your thoughts on quote-unquote play acting, and then Ollie's comments as well?
Yeah, it is. You know, I've been, you know, all my group chats been talking about this all week, and the reality of the situation is, guys, this happens throughout the whole game. It's not just Son, it's not just Kane, it's you know, players across, you know, all different levels. Unfortunately, you know, they are going down that, the faintest of touches, and you know, referees are falling for it. I think with regard to like Ollie versus Jose Mourinho, I think it's a weird kind of rivalry that is, I think, partly being forced a bit, and obviously the media like to play up on it. But at the end of the day, with all of Ollie's, you know, hugs and handshakes with his players and fist bumps and I've got their back or stuff, Mourinho is still their most successful manager since Ferguson. And I think that sticks a bit in the United fans, and then not fans, but in the management. They definitely want to start winning things again to prove that they're all right to move on from Mourinho. It's not just all vibes. And it does look like Ollie saves his best moments for us, you know, and, you know, obviously 6-1 aside. He tends to get the best out of his players coming up against us. And I think he likes to push that button. I think his comment at the end was a bit weird, and I know his son jumped on it the next day, didn't he? You know, because, mm-hmm. you know, Jose pushed back, and then his son was like, oh, no, I eat properly and all that stuff. It just gets a bit weird. And I think, you know, for us to, you know, it's the only probably thing to speak about after our performance. But, yeah, Son did go down too easily. Was I glad that the goal got ruled out? Yeah, of course, I'm, you know, it's one of the things I can admit that we went down soft, but at the same time, we'll take the benefit from it. Obviously, we end up losing the game, and we end up losing to Cavani's, you know, very good performance. But yeah, it's one of those things that, you know, we see it all the way throughout. Does there seem to be a bit of an agenda when sometimes, you know, when it's, you know, predominantly like, you know, Kane, everyone talks about Kane's special move, you know, the one that every striker does, you know, when they've got the ball.
Yes, yes.
And play, you know, that one. But, you know, it's one of those things. You kind of learn to roll with it. But, yeah, it's just a weird kind of, I don't know what it is with Ollie and you know, his comments on Jose. It seems to be every game in the lead up to the game or after, you know, it gets a bit spiky. So, yeah, I don't know. We'll see how it pans out. If we're lucky enough to well, actually, I think we'll probably have a new manager, hopefully, by next season. So we'll see what happens there.
That is the hope, absolutely. In regards to Ollie's comment, Jose actually, you know, like you said, Jose did bite back, and Jose essentially said, Son's dad is a better man than Ollie, and I'm glad. And Jose made a point. Jack, I wonder your thoughts on this. Jose basically said, if I said what Ollie said, what would you man be saying? That is effectively what he said in the press conference. And, you know, just going, because I think Yao, one of our pod members, Yao sort of has spoken about this. People like to do this thing, people who aren't Tottenham fans like to do this thing where they say that we're the media darlings and all this kind of stuff. And I'm like, what the hell are you lot talking about? Like, do you listen to what's actually said? Because they think Harry Kane is getting away with fouls or whatever. And, you know, Dave, you touched on this whole constructed. It's a bit like WWE. You know, when there's no storyline popping off, so like, okay, who can we get Roman Reigns and beef with this week? Do you know what I'm saying? Like, that is kind of what it feels like. And it's not quite banging. So, Jack, I was just wondering, like, what do you think the reaction would have been if Ollie came out and said that whole thing about if Bruno stayed down like that, and that's my son, I'm not feeding him.
I mean. So we know how big Jose is in the media, in the world, whatever, and he'll obviously get much more backlash because, again, he's not the Jose of the mid-noughties where he was loved by everyone. Whatever he said, people, it was gospel. People took to it. People warmed to it. He's a different man, and people see him in a different light, and it would have got a lot more backlash. You see the interviews with Sky Sports to Pogba and the questions they ask him about Jose, you know, all the stats about Jose being, you know, Jose's team being, you know, sort of the team that's top of sort of, or second in the, taking the lead, in the teams taking the lead, and then obviously being last in teams being able to hold the lead, or 19th, or whatever. yeah, he would obviously be scrutinised completely. We know this. Like, he obviously is the man. He's not the man anymore. He's not the, you know, he's like, again, I've said this before, he's like Winston Churchill in The Crown, you know, absolutely outmodded. The guy doesn't know he's done. Everyone else, all his team, all his, you know, his members of staff know this guy's, his methods are completely outdated, his views, everything of that nature. He's finished, but he can't see it yet. He, I don't know what it will take for him to actually finally recognise it, but that's what it is. And I think in The Crown, I don't know if you guys watched The Crown or anyone watched it, but the moment he realised it was when he had someone do his portrait, and he didn't like it because he thought he looked old and he looked, you know, worn down. But that is what he looked like, and then it took him to realise through that. And boy, someone needs to paint Jose's portrait now because he is finished.
So if anyone listening, definitely follow one or two painters online. So if any of you are listening to this and you'd like to commission a painting of Jose Mourinho in time for the final or after, please do get in touch with Touchline Media Group. Thank you very much.
There is a certain picture with a droopy titty, which could probably serve as a good painting, a great NFT for him. That picture actually triggered me when it first came out as well, but it's fitting now, so.
Yeah.
Think back to when he came and you were talking to Dele Alli about, you know, I want.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
On Ali and not Ali's brother, all that kind of talk. Mate, someone needs to talk to him about him and his twin brother, do you mean? this is a pale imitation. And
I would love Dele to come out with that.
Yeah, yeah, you love to come out and just be like, you know, where's your brother, mate?
Welcome to your brother.
Yeah, it's a shocker from Mourinho. But we all know if it was on the other way round, you know, if Mourinho said anything like that, boy, it would have been, you know, we'd still be talking about it today. They'd have mentioned it probably before today's game, after today's game. They did actually mention about the Pogba thing to Mourinho in his post game, and I think he's turned around and said that. Let me just get the tweet.
Credit Karma has always been there to help you make better financial decisions. And now they want to help you even more. With a Credit Karma Money Spend account, you can be rewarded for good money habits. Credit Karma Money is a brand new checking account where you can win cash reimbursements for making purchases. Just pay with your debit card, and if you win, you'll be notified on the spot and your Instant Karma cash will be added back to your spend account. Open your FDIC-insured spend account for free. There's no minimum balance requirements, no overdraft fees, and free withdrawals from a network of over 50,000 ATMs. And when you make a purchase between June 8th and June 30th, you'll automatically be entered to win $1 million. Right now, visit creditkarma.com/winmoney to open your free account and start winning instant karma. Go to creditkarma.com/winmoney to sign up for free and start winning. That's creditkarma.com/winmoney. Instant Karma is sponsored by Credit Karma. No purchase necessary. Exclusions and terms apply. See rules. Banking services provided by MVB Bank Incorporated. Member FDIC. Maximum balance and transfer limits apply.
He doesn't want to comment on it. He says, he goes, you know, I wish I could act as if I care, but I really don't care. I'm not interested at all. So, yeah, that's Mourinho and the old Pogba situation there.
Dear, dear. Right. Whilst we are very good at turning negatives into lighthearted segments, we are very good at that. Unfortunately, another week, another L and another incident of racist abuse. So, you know, for those who did or didn't see, Heung-min Son actually put out a very heartfelt interview prior to the racial abuse, or to be honest, it was probably during. And I know that there's this weird section on Spurs Twitter that think players, apologies if you can hear the car alarm going off. Like, I live in a particular type of area in Liverpool. This is an hourly occurrence. I do apologise to any Cop End Fracker people listening also. Oh, it stopped. Anyway,
So yeah, Son basically was, you know, very apologetic. He said sorry about 5 times in about 10 seconds. So the section of Spurs Twitter that think it's really important for players to apologize because it shows they care. I hope you got what you wanted. I don't know if that's your kink or if that's what you're into football wise, but I honestly hope that satisfied you. Obviously, it's always nice to. We'd rather players didn't have to take a bit of accountability like that, but it is what it is. But yeah, so Son suffered racist abuse online again. What was it, a week after Davinson Sanchez got the same? And it's just starting to feel a bit cyclical. Like we can't say we're bored of racism. You know, these are people's lives. These are guys. This is a man who, you know, whether he's in form or not, runs his ass off for 90 minutes, has been one of our better players this season. So it's just absolutely mind-boggling. I don't really need to ask you guys thoughts on it because I think we're all in agreement. It's a disgrace. Where something needs to be done ASAP by the social media companies and all that kind of stuff. But something that I wanted to touch on a little bit. So we, a couple episodes ago with Naz from the Anfield Talk, we talked about, you know, stereotypes and attitudes towards South Asian players. And it's something that, if I'm being really honest, the only person I've seen speak up really prominently on this next bit is Mel, at Ceballos, and she's touched on general attitudes and low-key racism towards East Asian players, which is probably not taken as seriously. I just wondered what you guys were thinking in terms of that. How do you think racism is it subtle? Is it not taken as seriously towards the East Asians, like the Koreans and the Chinese?
I think particularly in this country, it's down to numbers. I think there aren't as... this country isn't as populated with people from East Asia as they are from South Asia or Caribbean or African backgrounds. So I think there's less of a voice and there's less of a representation of that as a result due to how many people there are of that background in this country. And it's just sad that it doesn't get treated equally. And, you know, it's just such a shame. And the worst thing is it's people are just so used to hearing it. And it's just that, it's just absolutely, I don't know what to say really. I mean, and the worst thing is, like, from many of our points of view, that we're so used to hearing this about all races that, you know, particularly on social media, on Instagram, that you just don't know how to respond. Yeah, I wish I could be more angry, but you become numb. It's almost desensitization. And Because everyone, you know, Instagram platforms like that don't stop it. They don't, you know, you can. Mm. Yeah, there's so many things you can't say on Instagram yet. There's so many things you still are allowed to say.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't know where they draw the line, to be honest. I don't know what you guys think, but it's just the inconsistencies.
I think you've also got an issue that, you know, you can't even pin it down to one club or one, you know, the opposition fans or whatever. You know, we saw it with Sanchez a few weeks ago. There was our own fans that were sending abuse. I'm sure there were fans who, you know, were ready to string, you know, a few tweets together about Son, you know, when he makes mistakes. And I think just what you said about, you know, in terms of numbers, and representation, that is what it is. You know, you may not be as aware of what goes on in certain communities and the abuse that they get because it's not reported on, it's not brought to light. But the fight against racism is not a football issue, it's a society issue, isn't it? This is what football has done. It's given people a place where they can hide, and the social media platforms have aimed at that. We see it, you know, and it's been long documented in this country from the terraces. And we're not talking about in black and white, you know, in the old days, you know, excuse the pun. We're talking about Raheem Sterling a few years ago. We're talking about players in the international side of things. Obviously, we know about the Slavia Prague issue. And the light kind of slap on the wrist that footballers get or, you know, football clubs get. You know, if you find a football club 50K in their Premier League club, you know, they can find that, you know, in dinner ladies envelope. Do you know what I mean? There's not enough strong action taken against these things to even give the appearance that what we're doing is trying to make a definitive stand. You know, when you suspend a player, I think I tweeted it the other day. They suspended the player for 10 games, you know, the Slavia Prague, put out with the name. But then Rio Ferdinand got, what, 8 months for a missed drug test. You know, like these things, you know, you can't erase what's happened and the bans that you've given out to other players for indiscretions which, you know, have nothing on this kind of racism. So I think, you know, a stronger line from the top would help, and it will help maybe make football a safer space for a lot of these communities to even feel like they have an entrance into the game. You know, I can only imagine what this has for, you know, at a grassroots level, where, you know, you're looking at, you know, you've got boys from China or Korea or whatever who won't want to get into the game, and they're seeing their heroes be abused online, they're seeing their heroes who are making so much money and having so much success on the pitch or whatever, but getting so much abuse, then, you know, what's the point? They'll go and do something a little bit less, you know, in the public eye, because they don't want to expose themselves to that. Families won't want to expose themselves to that. You know, there'll be a negative taint on our sport. So it's something that it needs to be addressed at so many different levels. But again, you can't pinpoint it and say, oh, it's just this club or it's just this set. You know, there will be, unfortunately, fans who go to our games, you know, and sit there a few rows up, who, as soon as a black player or an Asian player loses the ball, does a bit too much tricks or flicks, whatever.
Too flashy.
Too flashy, yeah. You see, you've got all the usual tropes. Too flashy. He's, you know, he's a lazy player. All those kind of things that hide a lot of the stereotypes and the prejudice that they have. It's an issue, and society needs to tackle it head on, and football needs to do more than just take a knee before games, because I think that's getting a bit tired now.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. Did they ever ban? Was there ever a ban on Millwall after their racist abuse on Sun? Or they were shouting profanity over a certain stereotype at Sun in a cup game, and I don't believe that any action was taken, which is crazy. Yeah, like you say, David, it has to come right from the top. It's something like Jack touched upon as well. There's not much as much. Chat and representation from the East Asian community, and again, it does need to come from the top.
Absolutely. This is definitely going to be my weakest segue, so bear with me. You touched on flashy players, which I personally don't have a problem with. I think triple drown sometimes. Speaking of flashy players, a flashy one did do an interview recently by the name of Paul Pogba. And he basically, so I just want to sort of talk about, you know, so Pogba's comments were obviously, all he really said was the main difference between Ollie and Jose is that Ollie doesn't go against the players, you know, and for all the Jose sexuals out there who do this, you see it every week. I don't know if it's for clicks or if they genuinely believe this or if they're in some kind of Jose cult underground, by the railway station. I don't know in it, but you know, a lot of people seem to do this thing. Oh, we're so lucky to have Jose. Oh, he's the only guy who could win us stuff. All this, that. And I don't really get it. So someone on the Discord asked, is this Jose? So I think this can tie into the Pogba interview somewhat. So someone on the Discord earlier during the Everton game asked, is this Jose's last club? So I'm going to throw that one out there. What do you, man, think? Is this Jose's last club?
It should be, because for me, Jose Mourinho is the kind of manager, his level is either the top or there's no level at all for me. I think with his sort of philosophy, it's a very extreme mindset and a very extreme philosophy in terms of not keeping the ball and allowing the other team to make a mistake when they lose it. And yeah, I just think he can only manage at that level where he is able to be backed with the players he wants, to be able to have a group of players, a set of players who are much more disciplined, because they come from a much more disciplinarian background. And that suited him to a T. There's an article in The Independent that says, you know, the average lifespan of a manager at the top level is sort of 11 years, roughly. You know, people talking about Capello, Marcello Lippi, Trapattoni, obviously Wenger and Alex Ferguson are kind of exceptions to the rule, but managers generally that are wedded to a philosophy tend to last about 11 years at the top. And once that's almost a generation, that is a generation of players, essentially. And he had his generation, he had his time, and it's done. He can't stay near a football club ever again for me. He can't manage this generation of players anymore. Generation Y, Z, whatever. He can't do it. And his you know, man management methods, it's not going to work anymore. His lack of tactical nous these days. You know, you see it with us, the pressing. It's not, he's just shouting press, press, press. They're not actually coached to press. There's no clear method or plan. When Kane goes up to one player, there's no selected player to press the second, press the player, the next option, basically. It's just chase the ball. That's not pressing. That's not how pressing works. He shouldn't be near a club again, in my opinion. I think he should take the role upstairs, stay well away from the touchline, essentially. He's done. And I call him the Pastel de Nata Pardew, because he's, honestly, there's always a bum manager out there you can compare him to. He's that bad. But, hey.
Man said the Mediterranean Mark Hughes. So Jay Spurs said in the comments said a couple of minutes ago, Jose needs to either adapt or do international football. I think he's incapable of adapting. I remember when he was doing his thing on Sky Sports, which is why I think he should have stayed, because he actually does give a half decent insight when he's a pundit on that kind of platform. I've said for a while, if he is going to go, if his next role where he could actually command a bit of respect, probably via some nepotism, will be the Portugal job. But someone kind of reminded me on the Discord that their current manager actually won Euro 2016. So Owen, what are your thoughts? Because you had a name for Jose earlier in the season. It leaves my mind. Would you care to remind me what you were calling Jose earlier in the year for the fans?
For the fans, I was smiling throughout Jack's comments as well, purely because I genuinely was open to Jose at first. I'm coming to the name, don't worry. I was open to Jose because I genuinely, like, the thing with him and his kind of club career at the moment, he did try to adapt, and the whole telling thing of, like, okay, yeah, he's going to be happy in London. He's come off the back of winning things in Manchester while living out of a hotel, the hiring of an attack-minded assistant, this new promise of a new philosophy apparently to Daniel Levy. He looked like he tried to implement something different with us initially, and that led me to calling him Daddy, because I felt like his man management style would fit our dynamic as well.
Say that one more time. I was on part of the family back then. No, come on, Owen. Say it one more time. You called him what?
I can't even say it. I can't bring myself. Because he's kind of turned into this really this stepdaddy who's treated me very, very badly. But now, it was annoying as well, because I thought his management style of winning trophies would fit our dynamic of just being laughed at for never winning trophies as well. So I always felt like we needed a manager that had been and done it before to give us that confidence. And it's had the opposite effect, and it's now telling when you've got someone who's supposed to be a bit of a dinosaur in the game, who's gone past his the average lifespan of a manager in David Moyes, and he is now fourth in the league, where we've got another kind of pragmatic, past-thinking manager who's struggling to get a tune out of us, who were Champions League finalists less than 2 years ago. So, it is annoying. I can't even remember what the original question before what I used to call him was now. But so I was saying at the beginning of the season, shouts to him, that he is a great fit We've just got the best name yet for him as well in the chat. If you're just listening, someone in the chat has just called him Mugabe Megson.
Blood of Jesus.
Oh, wow.
Better than any name I've ever thought of him. So shout out anyone that's ever thought about that. Reeks of Toby, that does. So fair play.
Hell. Boy.
Yeah, he's a great fit for international management.
Yeah,
for the whole human rights thing going on, he'd probably suit managing Qatar. We should be boycotting that World Cup now anyway, so yeah, that's...
No, he should be managing Al-Qaeda, man. He's a football terrorist. Yeah. He is. No.
I think with Jose, obviously, you know, there's, like I said, you've got the Jose sexuals, you've got the Poch sexuals, and then you've got the balanced people like us. He gets called a dinosaur a lot, and I think, like, the facts don't lie in it, you know what I'm saying? So I think I did a little bit of reading, and something I found really interesting is he does all this talk about press, and we're obviously not conditioned or trained to actually press properly apart from one man, just run at one man. And so there's this term in football called high turnovers, which is basically being able to win the ball within 40 metres of the opposition goal. And I looked at a stat from when he was actually at United. So it was like pretty steady. So they would win the ball like an average 3.1, 3.2 times 40 metres from the goal. And then in the 2017-2018 season, the graph just takes this, I was about to just do my hand and realize people who are listening won't be able to see, but the graph just takes this really steep turn and it goes down from 3.1 to 2.2 in terms of high turnovers per goal. So whether he was, I don't know if it was a case of just he didn't know how to press or he was just teaching United how to sit, but that is a very clear statistic. I know some people like to pick fancy stats. I'm not going to lie, I've probably never, ever realised the term high turnovers until about 4 hours ago. But it's about, you know, making it applicable to actually, so you're trying to tell us to press, but the statistics show that you're actually bad at winning the ball within 40 metres of the goal. So what's the truth? And Ollie has actually, funny enough, brought them back up to the same original level of high turnover winning that they were in the first place. Something we touched on earlier with Kane's injury, when I was saying, you know, I think Kane might actually be, I just have this feeling Kane's going to play against City. And something, because I've had a lot of injuries just as a rugby player, and I've always just been, look, if I'm injured, I'm not playing, unless it's like super high stakes. If I'm like 85%, I can give you something, do you know what I'm saying? But I've, especially whatever sport it is, whether it's NFL, whether it's NBA, whether it's football, to be honest, they're probably a bit more vocal about it in NBA. The courtside boys will tell you, if man are not fit, man are not fit. Do you know what I'm saying? I don't think players should play through injury unless they absolutely have to. Like, it's a do or die relegation final, but, you know, we can't manage without you starting sort of thing. Not necessarily saying Kane has to start against City with that. And Jose's history with his attitude towards injury, so... You know, again, something I read, I remember there being this big thing about Chris Smalling and a broken toe. And he basically, I don't know if he played against Chelsea or he played against somebody, like, after a couple of injections. And he was really good. Jose called him phenomenal, all this kind of stuff. 2 weeks later, I think they were playing a Leicester team. And he was just like, basically, no, he's like, no, Jose, I'm fucked, man. Like, I can't play. Like, my toe is banged. Jose started questioning his bravery, all this kind of stuff. Turns out Smalling had a double fracture of the toe, which was a single fracture before this phenomenal game. Jose has a history of, you know, there's the proper old school managers that don't believe in the sports science and don't believe in the sports psychology. Unfortunately, it seems Jose falls into this kind of philosophy, because I also read there was, I think before Sir Alex Ferguson left, he'd like, basically had got United to spend a bit of money on this like nice little sports science area. Jose came in, said, fuck that, we're just going to turn these into massage beds. Man swapped sports scientists for massage beds in his first season at Old Trafford, which absolutely mind-boggling to me. And obviously we had the whole Ben Davies thing on Instagram where Jose was like, yeah, man, this is what happens when someone is brave and trying to help their team. And then you've got... What's another recent injury thing? Is probably, obviously,
sun burning out.
Yeah, sun burning out.
rushing back from injury. I think it was the Liverpool game. He walked off with like some double ankle injury and he played the next game pretty much.
Yeah, even in the All or Nothing documentary, when Son busted his arm and he was joking, you're like, yeah, but you can still play though. It's like, no, broke his fucking arm. Do you know what I mean? Like, you could see, like, the sports scientists and the physios, like, they were, you could see how shook they were to tell Jose he's not going to have a player. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, you just can't have that attitude, like, as a modern day coach. And I think that kind of ties into, we've got other stuff to talk about. I think that ties in a little bit to why we've not seen a lot of Bale recently. I'm not sure Bale has played more than 10 minutes in a game in the last, like, 3, 4, 5 games. And I think part of that is probably, Bale's probably thinking to himself, oh, look, like, my body's not what it is. If I don't feel right, I don't feel right. But then how many minutes did Bale play for Wales? He played 290s in the international break not long ago. Played 290s. So it's definitely just Jose doing this thing that Pogba was talking about when he's he was going against Luke Shaw and saying he's not an intentional footballer. You can't just go against players or just have your favourites or say that everyone's got to be a fucking Viking for you. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, that's, so for me, when I'd say man's a dinosaur, like, it's, you have to just accept, like, times are changing and you either change of it or you get left in the mud. And we are very much left in the fucking mud, boys.
Yeah. And go on.
Yeah, just from a coaching perspective, I know, you know, I was able to do a bit of coaching at work and that. Just looking at the game since Mourinho came into to English football in, what, 2004 with that Chelsea team, you know, the game is played higher up the pitch. You know, like, that's why, you know, those stats like, you know, high recovery and turnover ball and all this stuff come into it. And it's not just Barcelona. It's not, you know, that kind of tiki-taka era that we always kind of refer to as like changing the way football is played. But every team now is playing higher up the pitch, like, with higher defensive lines, all that kind of thing. So he's coming to Spurs and with players who are a quarter, if not a fifth, of the quality of his best teams with, you know, John Terry, Cavallo, all them kind of guys. And he's turned around and said, right, I want you to play in the same kind of style. You know, we're sitting back, we're absorbing pressure, hitting them on the counter. Now, attacking-wise, we can hit play. We can actually do damage on the counter. And we saw it in the Burn game, this game. We can actually create quite a few chances. But we just don't have the personnel to play how football was 15 years ago, let alone even 10 years ago. You know, and so, yes, it's great because, you know, we've got a couple of ball-playing centre-backs and all this stuff. It looks great. But defensively, his whole system, and I've been looking at it for a couple of weeks and I haven't been on the pod, just looking at some of these recent games, I'm like, he's actually trying to force tactics, which just won't work in the modern game, which is why teams like Brighton look great against us, why even, you know, a Fulham, you know, remember, both the Fulham games have been closed for no reason because we're just playing a style of football that even the lesser teams in the Premiership, which is probably the most competitive league, you know, whether it's the best or not, whatever, but in terms of, you know, a team in the top four could lose to a team who's 13th or 14th, those kind of games happen quite regularly in our league. The game's gone beyond where he's coaching us defensively. And if he doesn't have enough to go and attack us, you know, from a forward perspective, we're in that kind of middle, and that's why our games are so boring, because it's not even like it's one or the other. It's this kind of middle, kind of just lukewarm, just weird kind of just compromise between his old tactics and what our players inherently know works. Remember, a lot of these guys were here with Poch. A lot of them know that playing on the front foot brought us some of our best moments. You know, yes, we didn't win any trophies, but we were able to get, you know, get things going. We were able to, you know, win games in the last 10 minutes. Remember that Swansea game where we were like 3-1 down and won 4-3 or something like that, or 2-1 down and won 3-2. You know, I think we scored like 2 goals in the last 3 minutes, you know, in the 90th minute. So those kind of games, you're not going to see that. You know, you're not going to see that with the current manager. So it's a shocker, really. And it's alienating the likes of Ali, Bale, even Lucas to a certain extent earlier in the season. Yeah, it's sad to see.
Exactly that. Just touching on.
So for the people that are listening, but there's a picture of on right now of Lloris and Aurier celebrating a 2-2 draw at Everton. World Cup winner.
It just speaks to where we are. It speaks to where we are.
Throw everyone in the bin. Throw everything in the game
that we were so trash, and they're celebrating. We were 2-pack of ass tonight. But speaking of alienating players, there's one particular player who we're going to try and squeeze him in just before the Southampton preview we can touch on. Obviously, Jose decided that Juan Foyth was better being in Spain under Unai Emery with Villarreal. Now, the thing with Foyth, so I've always just sort of thought, like, he was young, probably got a bit of his rashness from Uncle Lamella at training, but I think you can kind of afford to be that rash when you're a bit younger because you have time to iron out the mistakes, not a 27-year-old Portuguese passport-holding, buzz cut-having centre-back who thinks he's not a centre-back. No names. But I just want you guys to... Are we making a mistake letting Juan Foyth go? Because he only has a £13 million like permanent fee option on the Villarreal deal. So what do you guys think on Juan Foyth?
I think going for £30 million might be a bit... It's a bit underwhelming on it from our point of view. But having said that, I haven't been convinced by him. You know, people were calling out Aurier for being rash. This guy, in terms of rashness, this guy is... He has smallpox. This guy is... Honestly, the two penalties at Wolves, Crystal Palace, the sending off at Bournemouth, was it? Nah. He was on another level of rash. And yes, that can be coached out of you and whatnot, but even then, I wasn't convinced by him as a centre-back anyway, to be honest. He had his moments, he had a few decent performances, but I think letting him go for £30 million might be too little, especially considering it's Daniel Levy, but I'm more than happy to see the back of him, to be honest. Like, you know, even with our centre-backs, we just need to bin all of them, to be honest.
Every single one.
I remember thinking at the time that him getting the first team experience at Villarreal would actually be really, really good, but we've kind of jumped the gun by putting that clause in, giving them the option to buy him for such a low fee, because now we've got the benefit of hindsight. We kind of look at it and think, okay, off the back of what was a really good preseason for him, if I remember rightly, he showed a lot of the qualities he does have to offer, especially like at right back, which is a problem position for us. He in hindsight, he would not have done worse than what we have this season. So, we should have at least, I guess, had the option for him to just, I guess, come back. I feel like we loaned him out because of the homegrown quota. Like, I'm not sure we could have even registered him, even if we wanted to. But for him to potentially go to Villarreal, which looks like they are going to take that option because they'd be silly not to, then, it was a bit jumping the gun because Levy, we signed him for £9 million. The clause is £30 million. So with inflation, he's broken even. We could have got a bit more for him regardless. If we're lucky, we can use him as a make weight for one of Villarreal's centre backs. There's one in particular that has been making a bit of noise in Pau Torres. If I've said his name right, if we can potentially use Foyth in the make weight for that, that might be able to be a saving grace for us.
Yeah, I think Foyth's best games for us were you know when he played the odd European tie or against lower opposition. He struggled in the Premiership. That was just horrible. He does have a talent. He has got talent, and we saw it on occasion. But like Jack said, he's too rash. And his lack of concentration and composure, I think, just doesn't suit the speed of the English game, especially at the level we're trying to go to. So I think, you know, yes, would he have probably done better for us against Zagreb? Probably, yeah. You know, but we don't want to play the Zagrebs. You know, we don't want to be playing those games. We want to be challenging higher up the league and in better European competition. So I think, if we can get a better player in to replace him, then obviously we'll go for it. Wish him all the best, but I do think he was a bit limited. And seeing him flourish overseas in a different league, a slower league, there is a bit more time on the ball. You know, he's not going to get... He doesn't have to face the type of midfields that he would face in England week in, week out. You know, obviously there's some top players out in Spain, but I think he's probably thrived off, you know, a bit of a slower pace to it, But in terms of, you know, someone just put, you know, who do we want to sign for Spurs in terms of replacements, there's a centre-back I've been looking at for the past couple of years. He played out in Bayer Leverkusen, and I put in a group chat, Jonathan Tah, German centre-back. I think his market rate is about 18 million at the moment. And from what I saw at the World Cup, not World Cup, the Euros a couple of years ago, he looked decent. I think he'll be a better upgrade on pretty much all of our players. You look at some Anderson, I think there's talk about Anderson from Fulham, I think it is. Mate, money's going to be tight, but if we can get at least one decent centre-back in and maybe see what we can get out of Toby for one more season, because Toby still is our best centre-back, isn't he? So, go from there.
You just know it's going to be Vestergaard, isn't it? You just know that.
Yeah. We know that.
Joshy.7, I assume you're a Wolves fan, but we appreciate the questions nonetheless. So I'm going to try and answer your three questions in one sweep. So your first question was, what do you think of Wolves this season? I think they're fucking pricks for selling us number two for 14.7 million. Because when Paul Merson was like, oh, why have they let him go for so cheap? And history tells that if Paul Merson disagrees with an opinion, the opinion's probably right. So that's the first thing I think. Do I think they'll be relegated and beat Sheffield United? No, I don't think they're going to be relegated. I think the relegation battle will be very interesting, but no, I don't think Wolves will go down. But if Wolves did go down, I would love to have Pedro Neto off them. I think he's a baller. Very unlucky with his injury recently. So there's been a bit of talk about, you know, the way it's obviously we've spoken at 1-4 and some people saying he should have had his chance, shouldn't have had his chance. And the way his development has gone is quite similar to Kyle Walker-Peters, who we are probably facing at some point next week. So with regards to that, Southampton, 14th in the league. Their recent run of results haven't looked too tasty. Got cooked 3-0. Actually, I might have just lied. They got cooked 3-0 by Sam Allardyce's boys, I think. That guy, Carl Robinson, actually scored his first Premier League goals that weren't against Chelsea. Fun fact. So they just got beat by West Brom. They're going to have one eye on the semi-final against... Actually, they've just played their semi-final against Leicester. So how do you boys think the Southampton game is going to go, Jack?
I don't want to see a back three. I don't want to ever see that again because it's not worked this season. What has worked has been the back four primarily, even though neither are working right now. I'm hoping to see Toby and Jaffet centre back. That would be ideal, but I think he's going to go Dyer again. I think he's fed up with Sanchez, to be honest. Number two, he might feature. I think number two is probably going to feature as a fullback, not a right back. I think Reguilon will be dropped. You know, I have a feeling that we saw for Sigurdsson's second goal, him jogging back before getting to the cross, and he had an atrocious performance that game. Anyway, he was rightfully taken off. I think Jose will see that, and Jose will see the lack of urgency from him as well, and lack of chasing down the ball. He'll probably pay Benjamin there, I think. I think Benjamin will feature. I can't see Ndombele playing this game. I think GLC will feature with Højbjerg in that midfield. Again, Ndombele was poor, and Jose will he'll see that. He'll see that more than he'll see other players, definitely. And yeah, Kane definitely won't feature. I think Bale, Vinny, and potentially Moura up front. I think he might rest Son and Kane for the final. I think he will put always. He's going to have to. It's our only important game of the season now. We don't have it. All the other games are dead rubber. So he's going to have to play a weakened squad. So I think Bale, Vinny, and either Bergwijn or Moura, one of them will feature. It's going to be a very weakened side. And yeah. I'm not optimistic about it, but yeah.
Don't blame you in the slightest. I think we didn't say it when we touched on Everton, but just quick show of hands. Did anyone else not think it was a penalty? Because I think Reguilon was rash with his running direction, but Hammers was on his way down and he kicked the floor. Reguilon's not actually touched him before he hit the ground, but
I'm probably, I like it, it doesn't really matter because you didn't deserve to win. But I don't know if you man thought it was a pen or not.
Yeah, I don't think it was. But you know, it's Ayers Rass from rugby on, and he's been off the ball since he's come back from his injury. I think we can safely say he's lost the impetus that he had in the first half of the season, in both directions, defensively and attacking wise. He seems to be a little bit more hesitant on the ball, and he's definitely not pressing and you know, putting the opposition under pressure as he was. And then that could be a tactical thing. It could be the fact that he's got so many different partners next to him. You know, he's had, you know, Sanchez. This is our 17th centre back partnership in 32 games this season. That's over half the games we've had a different centre back partnership. Do you mean for anyone in any sport defensively? You know, it's all about combinations and partnerships. If you can't build any of that, and I think he'll ring the changes for the Southampton game as well. I actually think we will see Sanchez. I think we'll see Sanchez and Rodon, or Sanchez and Dyer. I think he'll keep Toby on ice, hopefully for the final. And Ndombele, don't see Ndombele playing midweek. It'll be Lacelso, Moura probably play, Lamella, Son and Vinny, and then fill in the gaps, really. I'm hoping number two is injured for the rest of the season.
Nothing too heavy, nothing too strenuous, but just enough.
Just don't want to see you back in training. you know, I don't rate him at all, as you guys know. But yeah, number two, the man who will not be named. I don't think he should play. But it's do we stick with Serge for the next couple of games? Is Serge going to play three games in a week, or is he going to give Tanganga a chance in the final? I think he was going to give Tanganga a chance in the final because he just seemed to be a bit more defensively assured against trickier players. And we've seen it in his first game in Liverpool. In all the big games that he's played in, he's probably been one of our better players. If still he has a bit of food deficiencies. And again, it's all about who's next to him. Now, when he's got Toby next to him, when he's got, you know, a leader in defence, Jaffa looks even better than he actually is. Then we know he can play. But still, when he's got a cover for Sanchez and do, you know, all the legwork for two players, it's a lot of things. So we'll see what happens. But, you know, it's going to be a bit of a mishmash and a game that we'll all be forced to watch because we have that sick compulsion for the club.
Indeed. You know? There's definitely an element of sadomasochism when supporting Tottenham Hotspur. So, Owen, can you give me a score prediction, please, for Southampton?
I'll go for... I feel quite numb going into this game, to be honest. For me, I'll just be interested to see how we do it without Kane, because I have no doubt he's going to be rested. But I'll go for maybe a messy and undeserved 2-2 draw.
2-2 sounds fair. Jack, what about you?
Yeah, I'll say a draw as well. I'll say probably a 1-1. No Kane, no game, really.
School draw. Are we going for a school draw hat-trick, Dave?
Nope, I think we're going to lose this game. I think Danny is going to have his way with our defence. 2-1 to Southampton, unfortunately. It would be great if we have a win before Sunday, because I do feel like we're going to get pummeled on Sunday. but now I can see Southampton just having a good day against us, you know, and just really exposing some of these deficiencies that Newcastle exposed. Come on, you know, so I think it's going to be 2-1 loss, and then we'll see what happens on Sunday.
I'm actually inclined to... I don't think I've ever given a loss as my prediction, but I'm inclined to agree. I think we're going to lose 2-1. I think Vinny's going to get a goal, probably smash it from 4 yards, and then celebrate like Mbappe. But I quite like that he does that, to be fair. I quite enjoy it. I have no issue with him celebrating.
I like him.
I have no problem with that. I think... if Benjamin plays, I think Phil Walcott is just going to done his dance in 100 metres. I think Danny Ings is going to try and get on that Europlane and shoot. And Ward-Prowse will just probably pop it top bins from 27 yards.
He always has his best game against us.
He loves it. He loves it. And Kyle Walker-Peters he's going to want to show up as well, obviously. Let's just hope Spurs don't, you know, all we ask is just not to be disgraced. You know, we had a sponsor disgrace us the other day,
You know, we're trying to paint over some cracks, as they say. Thank you very much. I've been trying to do that for about an hour and 20 minutes. But yeah, so that's, thank you for listening to this week's episode of Touchline Hotspur. Make sure you're following us on Twitter. That is Spurs_Touchline. Follow the Instagram as well. Also Spurs_Touchline. Obviously the YouTube as well. Follow Touchline Fracker for the YouTube. You have the Spurs specific playlist. Join us on Discord next week. There will probably be one for Southampton. There will absolutely be one for the final, because not necessarily just to listen to us talk about Spurs, but it's more for people to sip the blood of their enemies, if I'm being really honest with you. I've been your host, Ohio, at Ohio V1. Dave, Owen, Jack, thank you very much. Juicy Jeff, it says, I'm terrified about the Man City game, as are we, my friend. As are we. And thank you very much, boys. Take it easy.
On debut, Tunga Ndombele has scored the equaliser for Spurs. Lucas Moura clips it. A great goal! Steven Bergwijn has arrived in North London! That is absolutely incredible on debut! Oh yeah!
Sports Social Podcast Network.